I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, excited now to be back once again with Taylor Ann Bradford, journalist for the Gloucester Daily Times. And Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing well, staying warm as it gets even colder and colder these days.
I'm loving it. This is ski weather. This is the kind of winter I eat up like ice cream. I absolutely love it. And not cross country skiing. No, you know, not the kind of exercise you do. I'm downhill all the way. Let gravity do all the work.
Oh, well, both are quite enjoyable. I've never done cross-country skiing, but with the snow that we're about to get, I'm eager to try it out.
Okay. Nah, too much work. Well, you know, a lot going on, Taylor, in the last 2 weeks, and a lot even this week and even today in the Gloucester Times that you've written about, and I will have a link to it. I implore people to go visit the Times or buy the Times or log on. At any rate, I want to start with the most recent on St. Peter's Fiesta, which, of course, is the big festival in Gloucester every year, that originally began as a tribute to the patron saint of fishermen by the Gloucester fishing community. And last year was the first year in many, many years, if ever, that it was canceled. I was walking by St. Peter's Square yesterday, and I was just thinking, you know, maybe I should give Joe a call, Joe Novello. And he's the president of St. Peter's, I believe. But you did that. And for those of us who missed St. Peter's last year and were ruminating about it this year, what can you tell us?
Yeah, so the ideas and thoughts about if St. Peter's Fiesta will happen in the year 2021 in the summer is still to be determined. So I called Joe yesterday and, you know, was curious to know, you know, if they were to think about having it, they'd have to start the process now or even earlier than February, just to do all the permitting and all the, you know, hiring of vendors and entertainers. And so curious to see what their thoughts were. And Joe was saying how, as of right now, they're starting the process. So that Fiesta will happen, if it does happen, it'll happen June 23rd through June 27th. But he said that they're going to make the final decision in May. So the first week of May is going to be the time that everyone should tune in, because that is the week in which we will know whether or not St. Peter's Fiesta will happen this year. And he also mentioned that they're not going to push it back to September if they aren't able to do it in June, just because of different vendors might have, you know, contracts with other people or might be having other commitments. And so, you know, it seems as if May is the month to look out for, and really will be the determining factor if we have a St. Peter's Fiesta, if we have, you know, the greasy pole and the different races and foods and festivities. I know everyone is really looking forward to that, both residents and tourists, but yeah, it's still to be determined, and I'm hoping. I mean, you know, Rick, I have yet to go to St. Peter's Fiesta.
Okay.
So I think I went once as a child, but again, can you really celebrate and, you know, lean into the festivities as a child? I don't know. And so hoping that I can get a chance to report on what seems to be the most exciting week of the year here in Gloucester. So
there's no question, and it's unrivaled. And St. Peter's Fiesta, it takes up a good portion of the west side of Main Street and down on the waterfront there and over onto Commercial Street. And if you haven't participated as an adult, you're in for a treat, I'll tell you that. And it's it actually begins unofficially, it begins almost a week before, but I think it's on, you know, it begins officially on Thursday. The official opening is on Friday usually, but the carnival shows up on Wednesday, so the kids get to go to that. But more importantly, Taylor, I think the big thing is how many people. You mentioned the sports, but there are so many people involved over so many generations who still participate in these events, and some of them are still doing the greasy pole, the old timers, and you get pretty much weeded out by the greasy pole and by the seine boat races. They're just they're so competitive and so physically challenging, but generation after generation continues to support it. And you know, the training, actually, I don't know if you've seen anybody in the harbor yet, but it's going to begin pretty soon. You're going to see those seine boats out there. So and dories,
really?
You know, oh yeah, they'll be out there training. And the women have gotten so, the women are just challenging all the, it's amazing. So, I hope, I hope we have it, and I hope you get to participate. And you probably will have to report on it too, right?
Yes. I'll probably have, you know, I'll be able to make the cake and eat it too, as they say. So hopefully get to enjoy it in all different aspects. But I have a quick question for you, Rick. What is your, have you ever participated in the sign boat races or the greasy pole?
No.
No?
First of all, no, I wouldn't go on the greasy pole because I would probably fall off the platform before I even got to the telephone pole, and it looks too hurtful to me. Number one, so I'm a coward in that regard. And as far as the same boat races are concerned, I can barely pick up the damn oar. The equipment is so heavy, the boats are so heavy, but the guys who participate, most of them are athletes to begin with, and if they're not big, Taylor Ann, they're strong. Mm. Okay. Mm. And, no, I don't have the wherewithal for that, but I do admire, the competition and how these guys prepare for it. And as I said, most, if not all, of the participants are athletes, both on the greasy pole and the same boat races, and it's a marvel. And you know, as far as I know, it's unique to Gloucester. So no, I'm a very happy. What do they call it? I'm a professional same boat watcher. So that's how I go.
Ah, yes.
So no, in talking with Joe, he couldn't make any commitment, obviously, but did you get the feeling that things are sort of in order if COVID cooperates?
Yeah, so it seems they're filing all the paperwork as they do every year. He had mentioned that they, you know, in any other year, you know, COVID not a factor, they're starting as early as January anyways, and so they're starting that process. You know, what does it hurt to fill out all the paperwork, to send it in? He said that the city isn't necessarily receiving the applications quite yet, but they're sending them out, so, you know, once they can get the okay from the governor that, you know, the gathering sizes are still allowable, you know, different things like that. If it all lines up well and good, that they can kind of hit the ground running and just kind of launch off into festivities as, you know, the new normal ensues. So we'll see. But, I mean, he's hopeful. I think he said all that with an ounce of caution, just noting that last year they kind of had to navigate even more unsteady and navigable waters. So we'll see. But yeah, as of right now, he said they're going to just keep pushing along and see what the governor says, you know, in May. So
yeah, and in case you missed it, it's a big party too, I'll tell you that. It's a huge party. And you know, you mentioned tourists coming to town to participate and to observe. I know that for many families in Gloucester, it's a reunion, and people who are living in other parts of the country plan their vacation around St. Peter's Fiesta to come home as part of that reunion type get together. So I know that everybody is COVID fatigued, as they say, and we're hoping that this thing will open up with some real joyous celebrations pretty soon. Well, thank you for that report. Now the next thing that catches my eye that I'd like to hear you talk about is the situation of affordable housing. It's everywhere. It's not just in Gloucester, the concern for affordable housing. And I know that with the building of all the luxury homes now in Gloucester on the waterfront, building of the luxury apartments up at Gloucester Crossing, you know, old-time residents are concerned about being able to have their children and their grandchildren own houses and housing in Gloucester. So, what have you been researching and reporting on?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to note is just even that what you just said, Rick, is right. All the different developments that have been popping up here in the city. I feel like since I started reporting here, you know, at least once a week, I'm writing a story about development, about a new housing complex, about the fight against the development, the fighting for development. It feels like it's a constant conversation here in the city. And, you know, right now we're seeing multiple different construction projects for new housing units, all of which have affordable housing units within them, right? Halyard over at Gloucester Crossing, the old YMCA on Middle Street. We're seeing, you know, the Cameron's, the defunct Cameron's restaurant is becoming affordable housing. So lots of different projects that, you know, are trying to meet the needs for different people here in the city, both seniors and those who maybe have a lower income. But Gloucester's leaders are trying to, you know, increase housing availability and affordable for low-income and very low-income households. And they're starting the process by proposing changes to city ordinances to be able to make that possible. So the planning board has been drafting amendments to the city's inclusionary zoning ordinance to be able to, you know, not only make this make housing more affordable, but make it so it's really affordable to residents in Gloucester. And Rick, I think that is a conversation itself because, right, that emphasis of affordable to residents in Gloucester is very different than what's affordable to the definition made by the state. Mm-hmm. And that was really clear in a meeting that they had discussed last week to try to explain that, you know, the city has a definition of affordable and the state has a definition of affordable. And when I've reported in the past about, you know, these new affordable housing units, a lot of people comment back saying, you know, this is not affordable by Gloucester standards. So, you know, we're seeing a couple new housing units where a studio is priced at $1,700, you know, all the way to $1,900, $2,300. And to a lot of people who live here in the city of Gloucester, that's just not affordable. But if you were to define that by the state, it is. And Greg Catamatore from the planning board helped kind of parse that out for me and described it a little bit. And he had noted that Gloucester is a part of 110 communities in HUD's Boston, Cambridge, Quincy metropolitan statistical area. And so the area median income, of these 110 communities is $119,000. But Gloucester is only $65,000. So if you pin them up in between each other, it's kind of confusing because you look at them and you say, okay, we're going to define affordable by these 110 communities, which has the AMI of $119,000. But Gloucester residents are saying, you know, while we're lumped into that 110 communities, our AMI is much lower. And so it comes into this thing of, you know, they can't afford what's defined as affordable, so what can they afford? So it's a pretty complicated conversation, and there's a lot more to it. But so Greg and the people in the planning board right now are working with the city council to try to figure out just that, you know, how can we maybe separate the definition and really focus on just Gloucester. But again, you have to weed through federal regulations. You have to work with the state and kind of see, you know, how can they do that when there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of hoops to jump through to try to really separate the definitions. And so they're working right now. Again, that ordinance is the first thing as they try to make affordable housing in the city. But it's a very long conversation with a lot of complicated language. But once you kind of weed through it, it's fascinating. And it really is a constant conversation as people are wanting to move to the city. You know, as you said, you know, people want their grandkids to come and live here and want to be able to do that in a way that makes it affordable and living, not just, you know, feeling drowned in debt or just constant bills. So,
well, I tell you,
it's a conversation, but yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
As you know, I'm a math teacher and I don't understand money, but I want to thank you for really explaining this so well. I totally get it now and I appreciate that. That formula, there's a formula also that the state has for school aid, and a similar formula penalizes Gloucester as well. I'm glad you explained it beautifully. Thank you so much. Awesome. Good job. Now, let's turn over to the Gloucester Community Impact Unit. You reported on they're doing more good things.
Yeah, so the Community Impact Unit has been running for about a year here in the city, and they're a unit, a part of the Gloucester's Police Department that really focuses on outreach, and helping treat every part of the community here in Gloucester, you know, from the smallest of tots to the oldest generations here in the city. And their most recent kind of participation is with the Grace Center. So they went and they purchased food from Goombadi's restaurant and got rolls donated by Scolafani's. And they went over to the Grace Center's temporary location over at the Gloucester House and, you know, gave food to different residents in the area who are part of the Grace Center's program. So if you guys don't know the Grace Center, they focus on, you know, helping those who are either homeless or those who are maybe at high risk or in need of different assistances. And so it was a really incredible opportunity to actually go and kind of just observe and see the relationship between the Grace Center, the Community Impact Unit, and the residents that, you know, are either lifelong residents here or have been, you know, here for a while and are starting to build a really beautiful connection between all the different partnerships. And so Paul Bilodeau, photographer, and I went over there the other day this week and got to see just, you know, see Lieutenant Jeremiah Castro, you know, chatting fun Italian phrases of eating good food, people cheering. Everyone was very distant and masked, but you could just tell by the warmth in the room that everyone was really happy to be there and really appreciative of kind of what they were able to receive and also kind of the help they were able to get. And so I had a great opportunity to speak with one woman, Donna Grinnell, who just spoke the highest praises of Community Impact Unit's Tito Rodriguez, of just how she's been 27 years sober, and she really credits all to Tito and just his support of her. He helped her along that process all 27 years, and she just, you know, as she's been helped by him and others throughout the city, now that she has a house here in Gloucester, she's seeking ways in which to help others who might be in need or who are homeless. So it's really a beautiful example of, you know, someone helped Tito, and so Tito wants to help others, and so he helps Donna, and, you know, that it pays forward as people just, you know, show generosity and care to each other. So it was a beautiful representation of what the Community Impact Unit does, and really excited to see as they kind of enter into their second year of being a part of the city, how they're planning to bring more ideas to the table to make connections and just kind of, I think, destigmatize what people used to define the police as, and really show that, you know, they're more than just a uniform, but that they're people with the uniform on wanting to help others.
Well done.
It's kind of, it's really cool. And I applaud the Grace Center too, because they've been working all throughout the pandemic, and that's just been a cool thing to watch them, really connect with, those who are in need throughout the city.
Well, I know Jeremiah very well as a former student of mine. He has really, really risen to such heights running the Community Impact Unit, and they've done so many good things. Great story that I will link to so people can read it. And again, it's in the Gloucester Daily Times. I think it was yesterday, this week's anyway, written by Taylor Ann. Good stuff, Taylor Ann, man. Good stuff. Now, let's wrap it up by promoting your weekly column. We want to tease it. We don't want to give everything away, but what you got coming up tomorrow in the Gloucester Times?
Yeah, so Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and I thought, you know, I'd write a love letter to the woods and maybe go hug a few trees along the way. Just as I found a trail. This is so cool, Rick. I was running Dogtown with some friends this weekend, and by accidentally came upon a new trail. So, like, we got off trail, ended up in a residential neighborhood, ran down the street, and all of a sudden, a greenbelt reservation sign was just a green sign popping out of the snow, and I got so excited. And it was like a reservation I never heard before. And so we obviously went to go explore it, and it definitely looked a little different in the snow, but it's so fun. And so I'm excited to write a little clip of that experience and just, you know, let people know that this is a really fun, accessible trail, right alongside, I think, Dogtown, which is one that so many people love and has so much historical value here in the city. So excited to write about it, excited for people to read about it.
Looking forward to it. And I enjoy the trails. I enjoy running. I enjoy hiking. But I'm drawing the line at hugging. I ain't doing it, you know. I'm not going to go hug a tree. Sorry. That's it. You know, we're not supposed to hug right now anyway. Maybe I'll go up and elbow it, you know, but that's it.
Yes.
All right. Looking forward to that. Taylor Ann, this is great as always. Great talking with you. Be safe. Have a great weekend. And I want to remind everybody that is Taylor Ann Bradford of the Gloucester Daily Times. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.